The University of Missouri is home to numerous labs, but the Department of Human Development and Family Science, or HDFS, is perhaps one of the most extensive and historic that you can find. From education to research, HDFS focuses on the science of being human through interactions with family members, teachers, schools, peers, social media, romantic partners, and more. I'm Rachel Norden. In this episode of Thinking Out Loud, I talk with Dr. So-Young Park about Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is observed every October, with this year in Missouri, the 18th being designated as Domestic Violence Awareness Day. Before we get started, as a disclaimer, this episode contains conversation around topics of domestic violence and abuse that some listeners may find difficult to hear. If you or a loved one is in need of assistance, visit the episode description for resource links or skip to the end of this episode for hotline contact information.
As a scholar in human development and family science, my work focuses on the intersection of intimate partner violence, family law, and court outcomes. So when I look at when families go through critical transitions, such as divorce, I look at how divorce processes are for them as they go through those critical transition, and also during the family court process, how their history of domestic violence or intimate partner violence are documented during the processes to affect their child custody outcomes. Another critical transition that I look at is interpersonal violence in the context of family court decisions. So for example, I look at how civil domestic violence protection orders, which people know of as restraining orders, during that processes when survivors typically go through separation from their abusers, how that processes affect their family outcomes.
So do you provide, is this a research services that you do, is this something that is local to Columbia, to Missouri, or is this, you know, nationwide practices?
I started my graduate education in Illinois, so some of the research that I have published and presented are based in Illinois. Now that I have my position in Missouri, many of the grants and the works are focused on Missouri. But that doesn't mean that the work that I do is limited geographically to a certain state. A lot of the divorce research and intimate partner violence research applies to nationally, the nation as a whole, because if you look at trends in child custody law or trends in intimate partner violence law, for example, how intimate partner violence is addressed in the criminal system or in the family court system, many states follow through those contemporary trends in improving their justice system. And so, for instance, if one particular state adopts their friendly parent provision in their divorce law, which basically implies that even though you're separating from your partner, if you have a child, you need to maintain an amicable relationship and present yourself in the courts as if you're a cooperative parent with your partner, even though you may have had negative feelings against the person or you may have had a history of domestic violence, what you should focus on, what's best for your child, then typically what happens is many other states follow through and adopt those types of provisions.
So in the context of mid-Missouri and honing in just into Missouri and the challenges of Missouri as a state, do you face much difference in how you collect these policies and have collect this data in Missouri versus how you did it in Illinois? Is there anything you've seen, any kind of like statistical relationship that to you is outstanding for Missouri, whether that is positive or negative?
That is a great question. Every state varies. One thing that I've noticed in Missouri that is different from Illinois is that when victims file domestic violence protection orders, what initially happens is the courts decide whether an ex parte, an emergency order is required for the victim before a full hearing where both parties need to be present. During that process, many of the courts that where I have collected data in Illinois sees the victim in person, whereas many states in Missouri, especially rural states, do not meet the victim. So the judge makes the determination solely based on what is written on the petition form. And what I found based on my research is that not many people know how to present what has happened to them in writing. And so the writing quality may matter, knowing what to include. For example, details, dates, those types of information may be lacking. And without legal aid or any attorney helping them, the reason they get denied of their petition may not solely be that they are, the circumstances are not imminent enough for them to be offered a protection, but because of the quality of the narrative.
I mean, that's interesting to me. I did not know that the judge does not meet the victims here in Missouri. Is that just Missouri? Are there other states that you know of?
There may be other states. On the top of my head, I can't give you other examples, but that is only for the initial stage of the process. For the full hearing, a judge is required to meet both parties. It's just that the ex parte, the emergency order, gives protection to the victims for a couple of weeks before they actually have a full hearing. And in imminent circumstances, those protections may be extremely important for them, especially when they're planning to physically separate from their abuser. And so that could be an important difference.
So in the instances that people in these situations want to file this emergency, call, this ex parte, and aren't able or for whatever reason, to create the narrative that they need to communicate how dire this is for them. Where can people go to find that support and find those resources to know how to correctly communicate their situation?
Yes. Typically, it would be ideal for them to reach out to legal aid agencies such as True North of Columbia. And if you go online, there's multiple legal aid agencies that would offer help or even transcribe your petition so that you can submit it online.
Are there costs or fees associated with these services?
I don't believe so, but it would depend. A lot of the times they do have a lot of caseload. So sometimes cases that are complicated that involve, you know, sophisticated family situations and divorce may be turned down from certain agencies. However, I do believe a lot of legal aid agencies offer free services for them. And if those resources are not available, it's always good to go online and see examples of how protection orders are written, and also access the public library to see if they can find any resources about the processes that they would have to go through. Many survivors are often intimidated by the court system. And so for them to gain a little bit more confidence going into that process, I think reading resources and speaking to someone who may have gone through that process would be helpful for them to feel a lot more comfortable.
So I guess this next question is going to be a little bit two-parted. You had started to mention local resources here, like True North, and you've mentioned the library, going online. I'm thinking from the perspective of people who might be in more of those dire situations, who might not be able to get access to their library, who might even be in a position of not being able to get online for whatever reason, getting to these places. How would you suggest that people be heard and reach out in ways when they might be limited in these domestic situations? And what, part two, other local resources like True North, if any, are available to them?
True. The hotline is always available. So if they reach out to the hotline, usually the hotline also offers tremendous online resources. There's also a national agency. A lot of the times, the reason why victims seek for civil domestic violence protection orders is because they are hesitant to file charges against the abuser. This is because a civil petition is different from a criminal petition. Once it goes to the criminal side of things, they may lose their choice of whether or not to proceed with a case depending on the circumstances when the law enforcement was dispatched. For example, if you call law enforcement for domestic battery and the law enforcement gets there and determines that this is a criminal matter, then it is off from the hands of the victims as to whether or not they want to proceed with the case, right? And if you have other familial factors that makes you hesitant to continue with a charge against the abuser, that may not be the route that you would want to go to, especially if your immigration status or other social resources that are flowing through the abuser, going through the criminal justice system may actually put you at a risk greater than what you had imagined. Sure. You may have to physically separate from the person, or you may lose connection to everyone in your social network. And that often puts additional stress to the victim.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. It would be sounds like it's just one of those situations where it'd be a traumatic experience all around. And the goal is to not exacerbate that.
Yes.
So just backing up just a little bit, moving out of this topic of resources and a little bit more into the research and how this data is collected. It says here that you conduct research from a multidisciplinary, multi-method approach to bridge the family science and law. And we started talking about that a little bit earlier, but I was wondering if we could dig a little bit more into it. Like, what is this multifaceted approach that you take in collecting this data?
Yes, that's a great question. So typically in family science, we are used to interacting with our participants either in the form of collecting survey responses from them, interviewing them, or even observing them. That is typically our method of collecting data. I know some scholars prefer to use secondary data, which is extremely valuable. It's usually nationally representative. And so using those data sets will produce results that are generalizable nationally across states. What I mean by multifaceted is that I try to conduct my research in a way that is both objective and subjective. Subjective in the sense that I would love to hear the families' perspectives in the form of collecting a survey or interview, but I also objectively would like to look at their court records to make sure that their perceptions match with what actually happened, and also to get a better understanding of what actually happened in the court system, in addition to how they've explained it to me. So I usually collect case records from the court system, of course, upon the consent of the families, so that I have a better understanding of the processes that they went through and the outcomes that they had to meet as they were closing their case. And then, in addition to that, how they perceived the experiences.
It sounds like the work that you do and the research you collect requires a lot of empathy and a lot of discernment.
Yes, yeah. Yes. We also have to keep in mind that self-reported data has its value, but there's also certain biases, and we all are human beings, and especially when they've gone through such a traumatic experience, their recollection of the memory are not always accurate, and that is an important piece in research because it tells us how people cope with those stressful situations and how they make a closure within their minds. And so that is often rewarding for me to see the gaps between what had actually happened factually, but also how they've coped with that situation and made their own stories to move forward.
We're pretty well close to the end here. I will make sure that we get the hotline number out there. I also wanted to ask, are there any specific events or going on through the month of October of Domestic Violence Awareness Month that you wish to promote, make accessible to people? Any specific links to people that you would like to have out to people, or anything specific to the topic that you would like to share wrapping up at the end of this?
Yes. So I wanted to speak a little bit about Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It's observed every October and was first recognized by Congress in 1989, and it originated from the Day of Unity in 1981, which really aimed to connect advocates working to end violence against women and children. So it is really a day of advocacy and to ensure that we as a community would like to end violence against women and children. The CDC reports that 1 in 4 women and 1 in 9 men in the United States experience intrapartner violence during their lifetimes. So even if you think that you don't have anyone experiencing intrapartner violence in your networks, they may. And so expressing that you are participating in advocacy for that day may actually mean a lot to someone who may be experiencing those dire situations. And in Missouri alone, more than 45,000 hotline calls were made to domestic violence programs in 1 year alone. So just keeping in mind that there may be victims that are unreported within our networks, and making sure that we are there for them, and demonstrating that we actively advocate for their safety may be valuable.
Okay, well, thank you so much for this conversation today, Dr. Park. This was very enlightening. You've even shared resources with me that I didn't know were available. So I look forward to stepping in with awareness come October. So thank you for this conversation today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Dr. So-Young Park, assistant professor at the Department of Human Development and Family Science here at Mizzou. Dr. Park left us with a ton of resource links on research, resources, and more on domestic violence awareness, so visit the episode description to find those. And in observance of this month, Dr. Park has left a note of encouragement to listeners to attend at least one Domestic Violence Awareness Month event in this community or on campus to join in on raising awareness. Finally, if you or someone you know is experiencing domestic or interpartner violence, call the 24/7 National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE or text START to 88788. And for more resources from the National Domestic Violence Hotline, visit thehotline.org. I'm Rachel Norden, and you've been listening to Thinking Out Loud from KBIA 91.3 FM.